Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello there. Just wanted to remind you at the beginning of this episode that Audible.com, that's the world's top provider of downloadable audiobooks, they're offering all of my listeners a free audiobook. And to be honest, they're offering everybody a free audiobook. You don't have to be a listener to my podcast, but nevertheless, the offer is there. And if you'd like to get a free audiobook, just you can do it by going to audibletrial.com/teacherLuke. Okay, you can download a free audiobook and try out their service for 30 days. And if you do that, then I get a little bit of support from Audible. Okay, now let's get started with this brand new episode. And here we go.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to part two of this double episode of Luke's English Podcast, which is called The Lying Game. And in part one of this double episode, you heard me playing a speaking game with my friends Amber and Paul. The speaking game is called The Lying Game. And it's kind of just a fun activity that I sometimes play with my students. I thought it might be interesting to play it with my friends who are native speakers and so that you could listen to the results, okay? This is a game that you can play if you want to. I'll tell you more about that later on. Let's see, what are the rules of the lying game very quickly? So the rules are this. Everyone takes it in turns to have a go. All right. So if it's your go, you have to make a statement. Could be something about the past. Could be something about a habit that you have in the present, for example. But you make a statement. Then and you have to choose whether your statement is a lie or if it's true. Okay. You don't tell the other players if you're lying or telling the truth. You just say it as if it's true. Okay. And you can choose to tell a lie or to tell the truth. And the other two players have to guess or find out if you're lying or if you're telling the truth. Okay. And what they do is they ask you lots of questions. They interrogate you, cross-examine you until they're basically satisfied that you're either lying or telling the truth. And at that point, they have to decide. They have to say if they think it's a lie or if it's the truth, justifying their answer. Okay. Now, if the other players get it right, if they guess correctly, they get 1 point. Okay, if they guess incorrectly, they get no points. The player who made the statement can win more points by convincing the other two. All right. So, for example, if you tell a lie and someone says that it's true, you get 2 points. So every time someone gets it wrong, you get 2 points, okay? So it's a maximum of 4 points for the person making the statement and a maximum of 1 point when it's not your go. Does that make sense? I hope that I don't overcomplicate these things. I think I do sometimes, but I think you get the idea of the game, all right? So are they lying or are they telling the truth? You've got to ask questions to find out, okay? So where were we at the end of part one? Well, it was a bit dramatic. By the way, if you haven't listened to part one yet, then I suggest that you listen to part one before you listen to part two, because it's going to make more sense. Okay, so if don't listen to this if you haven't listened to part one. Go back to part one and listen to that. All right. So what happened at the end of part one? Well, I went first. I made a statement. I said that I met Dave Grohl, the drummer from Nirvana, at a Buddhist temple in Japan. Okay, now long-term listeners to this podcast or observant Lepsters who listen carefully to Luke's English Podcast may have noticed that I've told that story on the podcast before, way, way, way back in something like episode 100, and I think it's episode 112, I think so, somewhere in that region. The episode was called Sick in Japan, and I talked about some of my experiences of living in Japan, and one of those anecdotes in that episode was the fact that I met Dave Grohl at a Japanese temple. You know Dave Grohl, drummer from Nirvana. Rock star, the singer from the Foo Fighters. So I did meet him. So it's actually true. So if you are paying attention to episodes of Luke's English Podcast, you already knew that that was true. Okay, so there's a little reward for those of you who pay attention and listen to all of the episodes. So at the end of part one, I had 2 points, Amber had 2 points, and Paul had 2 points as well. So it's even Stevens. Okay, it's even Stevens. But of course, there's one round left, and that is Amber's round. So what's going to happen? The only way for Paul and me to stop Amber from winning is if we both choose the correct answer. What happens? Well, you've got to listen and find out, okay? So keep listening. I'll speak to you again briefly at the end. And that's particularly for English teachers who are listening to this. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about this game and how I use it in my classes. Okay, so there are a couple of tips at the end of the episode for English teachers. Okay, right. Now, you're probably dying to know what's going to happen next. I hope so. Well, anyway, now's the time for you to find out as we continue with this episode of Luke's English Podcast called The Lying Game, and it's now Amber's turn. So here we go.
We've all got two.
Everyone's got two. So it's even Stevens.
Even Stevens.
Even Stevens.
Okay, the deciding
Who's
round.
Steven? So this is the deciding round is Amber's, and this is basically... Oh, wait a minute. I think you've won. Unless we both get it wrong.
Unless we both get it right.
And then... Oh, well, let's see what happens.
Oh, then we might have to go for a tiebreaker.
Exciting. All right, okay.
So, Amber, it's your turn.
Okay, I didn't realise I need to make a statement. I'm trying to think about what I can say. I used to be a performer on the Rocky Horror Picture Show Cinema Shadow Cast.
What? You used to be a performer on the Rocky Horror Picture Show Shadow...
Cast.
Okay. Well, you need to explain what. First of all, what's the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
The Rocky Horror Picture Show is like a cult movie from the 70s, which is still really popular, and people like to go. And I mean, it was made into film and theatre, and people like to go to the cinema and watch it, and they go dressed up and they interact with the screen, like what's happening and going on, because it's a musical, it's lots of songs, and they often do like a cast. Copy it, you know, they do it, they perform the film as they're watching it in front of it, and they lead the audience in the singing and interaction.
Okay, so I just missed the bit about what they I get this. Rocky Horror Picture Show is a movie. It's like a sort of a gothic comedy sort of musical. Mm-hmm. I get that, I know what that is, but sorry, what was the shadow cast thing again?
Well, at the cinema, so it's because it's got this big cult following, it's shown at lots of cinemas,
right.
And at the same time that people go to watch it, they go dressed up, lots of people come dressed, not everyone, but you can go dressed up as like your favorite character.
Yeah.
And at the same time that it's being performed on screen,
yeah,
another cast, they perform it in front and they lead the audience, because there's lots of interaction, like when something happens on screen, the audience react either with words or actions as well as singing along.
Can you give an example of a specific interaction? I've never heard of this before.
You've never heard of it?
You know about the Rocky Horror Picture Show, right?
I don't know much about it, but I'm interested in this whole... Do they do the shadow stuff with other things?
So as the film's going on, everyone's got their character. So you're dressed up like the characters.
Like one of the characters on screen.
So there's the same cast kind of there in front as there are on screen. Maybe not everyone. You don't always have everyone, but it depends on the cinema.
So wait a minute. You've got the movie playing, the audience, and then you've got some other actors, including you there,
in front.
Sort of like playing along with the movie and inviting the audience to interact in various ways.
Exactly.
So when you say shadow, it's not actual shadows.
They're not shadows. That's just what we called it.
You're copying what happens on the screen.
Exactly.
Live in front of the audience, between the audience and the movie.
Exactly.
Okay.
So like, you know, you asked, for example, what? So there's lots of songs, and there's one song over at the Frankenstein Place, and Brad and Janet, they come out. I can tell you what the movie's about, but so Brad and Janet, they come out of the car and their car breaks down. They're a young couple and they're in love and they get married, and then they're driving off and their car breaks down, and they end up going into this weird castle for shelter
in the night.
This weird spooky castle in the night, and it's full of like transvestites and aliens, and it all goes crazy. That's the basic premise. And so like as they're walking through, it's raining, and so like the cast, they squirt sort of water at the audience, and what they are meant to have brought is like newspapers. So like then, like Brad and Janet, they to protect themselves.
Oh, okay.
Or there's a wedding and people throw rice, or that's contentious. Oh, okay. And there's rubber gloves and stuff like that.
Okay, so we know what it is now. But so you were in the cast, and Paul just asked, what was one of the things that you would get them to do? So you're spraying them with water from water pistols, and
water with water pistols. We'd have like the glove. You know, like one of them would have the gloves. You know, the Frankenfurter character, you know, when he puts him on, that's one of the big props, you know, because he sort of makes a man and he's always sort of snapping them, so he'd do that.
Right.
They play cards, and you know, we'd throw cards, or there's this moment where he's sort of doing this, and like one of them he'd have like this feather duster, and it'd be like they're sort of chasing it away.
Yeah, which one were you?
Colombia.
Well, tell us a little bit about Colombia.
Colombia. Okay, so Colombia was one of Frank's one of the main people. So if you don't know who they are, there's Frankenfurter. So he's the sort of main character.
Leader.
And he lives in this castle. And then there's the Magenta and Riff Raff, who are brother and sister. And they were the sort of like weird. That was Richard O'Brien who remade it. He played Riff Raff, and he's like the bald guy. And the Magenta, she's got the big hair with the red lips. And she does the beginning lip sync of the very famous lips that you see with Rocky Horror.
Right.
And Columbia, she's got that sort of very sparkly coat on, you know, with tails. And she tap dances. And she's in love with Frank, but she also is in love with Meatloaf. Eddie.
So are you tap dancing?
Well, yeah, but her tap dancing is really sort of, and then she falls over. Sorry, I just did a
so
big
you,
move.
You tap dance and then fell over?
Yeah, I mean, you just sort of...
As it was happening on screen?
Yeah, but it's like carpet in cinema. Oh, okay. I mean, it's just like, you're just sort of, everyone's going along, messing around. And there's lots of, the idea is that there's lots of things that the audience might know, especially because people come back again and again. Like, they don't just go once. Mm. It's culty, so they watch it again and again. Mm. So like, if someone says Brad Majors, you sort of, everyone shouts out asshole, or like Janet Weiss, slut. So you kind of do, you lead them in that.
All right. So
when was this?
This was a really long time ago. This was a really, really long time ago when I was living in London. So before I went to university, the year before I went to university.
So are you willing to reveal that year or not?
Do we have to reveal that year? The year before I went to university.
You don't have to. So it was basically 1971, 19... No, I'm just joking.
Just when the movie came out.
2001, 2002? Yeah. Anyway, we don't know, but it's just around the time of the movie.
And how did you get into it?
Well, I had already been a fan of the Rocky Horror Picture Show for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Which is a bit, I mean, it's a bit embarrassing.
Because it's like, geeky and a bit sort of, really, it's a little bit sad.
Did you speak Spanish and some Spanish guy got you involved in the thing?
Exactly. Right. No, I had watched the Rocky Horror Picture Show with a friend, and I thought it was really cool. And don't forget, this was a while ago. I thought lots of things were cool, like hanging out in Camden and wearing lots of black eye makeup. And anyway, so I was quite a big fan of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and then we went to London. There was the Prince Charles, I don't know if you know it, in...
Yeah, I know the Prince Charles Cinema.
Okay, so they did every week the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and I asked if they needed anyone, and they did. They got back to me. They said that
they were like,
someone.
We really need people because no one else is willing to do this.
But
so,
people were.
Come in.
Yes,
they did. Wait a minute. So, Paul, I mean... I'm wondering about this because it all seems so true. It all seems like it's possible.
Hold on. The Magenta, Columbia, is she a main character?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very small cast. I mean, she's not a main character like Brad and Janet. She's a small character of the main characters. Basically, you've just got the sort of team, and the only other characters who are not really in it, I mean, she has her song and she has her bit, are I guess
my question was going to be, you just walked up to the place and you said, do you need anyone? And one of the main characters didn't have a role. And they were like, we've got this whole... Surely they did auditions for this kind of stuff, no? I don't know how puppet theatre, shadow cinema works.
I went and I asked if they did have people. And I went and I asked if they needed anyone. How could I get involved?
Right.
And they said, just, you know, leave your name, which I did. And said that I'd be interested in helping. And
did you have an audition?
No, I didn't have an audition. I went up and met them, and I'd been a few times.
It's the Prince Charles Cinema. It's not that serious.
It's not very serious.
I've got no idea what's happening, so I'm being like really naive.
It's not a show. Like, you're not paid or anything. It's just like you're a culty fan.
Is this the only film that they did this with?
I think they do it with other films too. Grease.
I was going to say Grease might. It seems like a film that they might do that with.
No, but they definitely dress up and do stuff at the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay,
definitely. And I can certainly imagine Amber in a pair of Doc Martens sometime, you know, before university, getting involved in this.
Luke, you know what's going to have to happen here?
What?
You're just going to have to go one...
No, you realise that we both have to come up with the same answer.
Really?
In order for her not to win.
Okay. All right, do you want to team up? Wait, that's not true
because hold on, if you've got 2 points, we've all got 2 points.
But wait a minute, Paul. Look, the only chance that we can beat her is if we both get the answer right.
Right. So that we, in order to for her not to win, we both have to come up with the same answer.
So are we going to team up to take her down?
We are going to team up to take her down.
Let's bring her down to Chinatown, Paul.
Okay.
And just fight it out.
Around the corner.
So we need to decide then if she's telling the truth or if she's just making this all up.
Oh, goodness me. What's your initial reaction?
My initial reaction is this is all true. But that's the thing, you see, because we know that she's clever because she listens to BBC Radio 4 and stuff. So we know that she's intelligent. So this is all clearly a very carefully planned thing where it all sounds perfectly reasonable. And it's almost like, yeah, she's having to admit this thing. Yeah, okay, I'll admit this true thing about why would she make up something that's sort of a bit embarrassing and sad? You know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, it's a bit sad, isn't it? It's not like very cool. So, you know, why would she make that up as a lie? And so I think she's revealing that as a sort of a truth to lure us in. I think she wants us to think it's true. But I also think that she knows that we are going to think that it's a lie. And so it's a double bluff. I think that she's expecting us to not believe this. And so it's a double bluff. I think it is, in fact, true.
I've got no idea. Because I mean, there was a lot of detail. A lot of detail that I can't verify, but you seem to be like, yeah, this is all true.
Yeah.
I think it's either going to be true or her sister was in it or someone very close to her who was part of the... She didn't actually perform in it.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Maybe she hates the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Maybe she absolutely... This is what she's going to do is we're going to go, yeah, it's true. And she's going to go, no, it's a lie. I hate the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I would never do that. And then she's going to feel all chuffed with herself.
But she knows somebody that did. And that's why she knows all the details of like throwing rice. Because that was all very visual, like throwing the rice, the water stuff.
Just wait a minute. Tell us about the Prince Charles Cinema. So what was it easy to interact with the audience?
Yeah, definitely.
Really?
Well, yeah, because it's quite a small sal. I've got forgotten the words in English.
Room.
It's quite a small room, and you had a little space in the front, and then we could also go up the aisle, and all the audience were up for it.
When the film started? How does the film start? Are there credits?
During the credits, you've got the big mouth and the lips.
And did you all come out from the side?
We were there.
Wait a minute. Did you see that? She knows some of the lyrics. She's a fan. Let's accept that as a fact. She knows some of the lyrics. She's a fan. If she wasn't a fan, she would not know these details. She's a fan.
Okay.
So that supports the fact that it's true. Question about the Prince Charles Cinema. What's different about the Prince Charles Cinema compared to other cinemas? Something's kind of unique about it. What is it?
What do you mean?
I mean there's something where it is. About the design of the room. Something kind of different about it than which I think you would notice if you'd worked there.
Something different about the Prince Charles Cinema.
Yeah, yeah. That room is downstairs, right?
No.
It's upstairs?
It's on the ground floor.
The cinema's on the ground floor, really? When you go in the door, which way do you turn to get into that room?
And then you turn, there's the box, and then you turn left.
You turn left, down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's been a while. It's been a while since you were there.
This is good, Luke. Keep going.
But the room then? So, I mean, you were standing there at the front near the screen, right?
With the screen behind you.
Yeah.
As you were doing it.
Could you see everyone quite easily in the room?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. What direction? I guess you're looking up at the people at the back and sort of the people at the front here, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you looking at the screen at the same time?
Were we looking at the screen?
Yeah, or do you just know the film off by heart?
No, we know the film off by heart.
Okay. Now, it's interesting, Paul, that I said you're looking up at the people at the back and stuff. It's interesting that she said that because the thing about the Prince Charles Cinema is that unlike other cinemas where the back is at the top, at the Prince Charles Cinema, the back is actually at the bottom. And you sit at the back and the room slopes up towards the screen. So the people on the front row are actually higher than the people on the back row. And so it's actually...
Is this on a slope?
Yeah, it's near, just off Leicester Square.
Is it the one...
It's a long red, very plush, sort of cool cinema where they show
not premieres.
Okay. It's like cult movies like the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Grease and Star Wars and stuff. So I don't know. No, this isn't working though, because look, she's kind of like, no, this isn't a big deal, because she hasn't really noticed that. But there is a feature of the cinema that you sit back and you look up the slope to the screen. But this obviously isn't a significant thing. Or this, unless she's just giving me the poker face right now, which is like, you've discovered my secret evil plan and I'm not going to let away. Maybe inside she's shaking.
I think she is.
Jelly.
All right, we need to make a decision here, Luke. What do you think?
I still think it's true, Paul.
Do you?
Yeah. Or even though she got the some of the details of the cinema wrong, I think it's been a while since she was there, and you know who remembers who remembers these details anyway. I think it's true. But I need you to be with me on this one, because otherwise, you know, otherwise we're going to go down together.
We are, but I think it's a lie.
Why do you say that?
Well, from the previous interaction, that kind of sealed it. Like some of the details, some of the sketchy details.
Mm.
But also, as you said earlier on, when people try to lie, or they sometimes fill it with a lot of details.
Right.
And there was a lot of detail that didn't need to be in there.
Stuff about the film, trying to convince us that she was a fan of the film.
I think you've been to see a production of this. I think she was in the audience of one of these.
So you reckon her like doing the lyrics was a trick?
I reckon she's a massive fan of the film, and she went to go see the film in this actual scenario at that theater. Right. Maybe the reason why she doesn't remember the details is because she was at that theater and the stuff was happening. She got rice on her, she got water on her, but she was a participant. She wasn't an actress or whatever you call it in there. I think the whole thing is true, apart from you actually being in the production. I think you were either you went to see it.
A couple of questions.
Okay.
Very final questions here. First of all, this was before university, so you were probably how old when this happened?
I was 18. 17.
You were 18. Oh, okay. What's the certificate? The certificate rating of the movie?
It's 15.
It's a 15. Oh, okay, right then. I was going to see, because if she said, "Oh, I was 17," and we discovered that it's an 18 certificate film, then obviously that would have been a problem. But no, it's a 15 movie and she was 18, apparently. Are you going to convince me that it's a lie, Paul?
I feel bad, because if I convince you if it's a lie and then it's the truth, then it's my fault. But then it's the same the other way around now, because if you think it's a truth and you're trying to convince me and it's a lie, then...
I'll be completely honest. I've got no idea if she's lying or telling the truth. But I think she's clever enough for me to fool me. So I think that I'm wrong about it being true. I'm going to go with what you say, Paul. I think it's a lie.
You think it's a lie?
Yeah, and that's an equal decision. It's not going to be your fault.
Really? It will be my fault, but you can take it out on me later at our show.
Okay, all right. I'll make fun of you.
Final decision.
Is that your final decision?
Can we find a friend?
Look at her face. Look at her face. She's like, is that your final decision? Look at this huge grin, expectant grin on her face. yeah, that's our final decision.
It's a lie.
It's a lie.
It is a lie.
Yes! Come on!
Yeah! Who does that? I was trying to think of something sad, the saddest thing I could do. And what I really wanted you to notice was that Tim Curry looks a lot like Tom Morton.
That was the... Okay, wait.
Hold on.
Wait a minute.
I'm lost now.
Wait, she said, what I want... The only reason she told that story is because she wanted us to notice that Tim Curry, one of the actors in the movie, looks like Tom Morton. Wait. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Morton, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, you may have noticed, Tom Morton is a friend of ours who looks not only like Dave Grohl, he also apparently looks like Tim Curry, who is one of the actors from the Rocky Horror Picture Show movie.
One of Tom Morton's favourite jokes at the moment, and when he is on stage, he talks about curries.
Does he?
He does, you know, Gandhi, curry, right. English food.
Indian food. Anyway.
There's some truth to that story, though. What's the truth?
The truth is, you were really right, Paul. I did like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I had seen it a few times, and I did go and see it at the Prince Charles once, and they did all this thing, and I thought, that does look quite fun, but then who does this? And then when I was thinking of a story to tell you, I really couldn't think of anything, and then when we were at the show the other night, one of the songs from the Rocky Horror Picture Show came on and I recognized it. And I thought, I know, I'll tell them a funny story about that. I'll see if it's, you know, because you don't want to tell a story which is a lie, which makes you sound like amazing.
Yeah.
You want to tell you something which sounds sad. And I did also reveal that I do like the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is a bit sad.
Okay. So any of my listeners who are in London, then I do recommend that you go to the Prince Charles Cinema. It's just off Leicester Square. It's a really cool cinema. And they show like really good movies. Like, I'm sure they were showing Back to the Future yesterday.
Undoubtedly. They have lots of cult movies, lots of sing-along movies you can go to. Mm. And yeah, just like a nice atmosphere.
It's
nice
cool.
Cinema.
It's a really cool place. Okay, so the final scores then. I ended up with 3 points. Paul ended up with 3 points. Amber, you got 2 points.
So we've got a tiebreaker.
Now we've first of all.
Well, we've already got our revenge from the last game where you destroyed us.
I did win. Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
So
the person that needs to win is Paul now.
3-3 between Paul and me. Okay. So how are we going to deal with this?
You need another story.
What? Just me?
Because one of you needs another story. Either of you have another story?
I've got another story.
I've
yeah.
got another story.
He's got another okay. story but, too. So, but we don't have time to go through the whole process.
We're
again.
Just like a quick one, no?
Should we time it? Should we say you've got like 3 minutes to ask questions, and then somebody's got to make
a
decision?
Yeah, we'll do. I've got a stopwatch.
But then we can still draw, and then this can keep going on forever. But
no.
It's not only me. You're involved in this as well, right? Or is it just us two?
It's just us.
Okay. Oh yeah, obviously.
Or maybe
it's just us.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Exactly.
All right. Okay. So we're going to get 3 minutes for
3 minutes.
One.
What, to tell the story and questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah,
3 minutes. So tell
so
me when you're ready.
First?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Go for it.
Start the clock. When I was a child, I was scared of the tooth fairy. You know, the tooth fairy, that's when you lose a tooth and you put your tooth under the pillow. And they say that a tooth fairy comes in and replaces it with money. In fact, obviously, it's your parents who do it. But I didn't know that. And when I was a kid, I was scared of the tooth fairy. Santa Claus, Father Christmas, fine. But the tooth fairy freaked me out to the point where... if I lost a tooth, my mum and dad would still put the tooth under a pillow, but the pillow would be outside the room in the hallway.
So you'd have a second... All right, let's go back to the start. Why were you scared? What was it about her that made you scared?
Just this weird little pixie alien thing. What the hell is it? Where does it come from? This magic little creature would come through the window and start messing around under my pillow. It's horrible. It's disgusting.
Do you have a brother or sister?
Yeah, I've got a brother.
Older?
Older brother, yeah.
What happened with the older brother? Didn't he reassure you?
No. I didn't believe what he said to me. He was like, don't worry, Luke, the tooth fairy's fine. It's nice. She'll give you money. And I was like, I'm not convinced by that. I don't like the idea of this weird winged miniature person.
So he talked to me about the pillow outside. So you had your pillow that you were sleeping on, and then you put your tooth under your pillow, or you put your tooth under the pillow under the outside door?
No, my pillow was taken from my bed and placed outside the door, and the tooth was put under that pillow.
So you had no pillow?
I had a replacement pillow. Mm-hmm. But my original pillow was placed outside the room.
Just when you lost your tooth? Outside the room in front of the door? Like where?
Yeah, just in front of the door, just outside the room.
Which way did your door open? Was it an inward opening
inside.
Door?
Inside.
He's going to know
the
that.
Room.
From the first tooth or every tooth?
Just the period in which I believed it was real and was scared. During
how
that period,
you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember. I was probably about 5, 6, or however old you are when you lose.
And your brother never stole the money from underneath the pillow.
No. Right. I always got the money.
That's 2 minutes.
The pillow thing.
You got to make a snap judgment here. You got how many seconds?
What else were you scared of?
50.
What else was I scared of?
What other things were you scared of?
Sharks.
You were scared of sharks?
I was very scared of sharks.
Were you scared of snakes?
I was scared of snakes as a child. I was scared of Darth Vader. I was scared of E.T. I went to see E.T. when I was a kid. Frightened the life out of me.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Did you see Peter Pan as a kid?
No, but I think I read some of the stories. I quite like Peter Pan.
I believe him.
Don't influence.
Tell me when 3 minutes is up.
You've got 20 seconds.
20 seconds. Oh, God.
So I liked Peter Pan, even though there was a fairy character in Peter Pan. But the thought of a real one coming through the window, I remember specifically the window being left open.
What, for the fairy?
Yeah.
No way.
But
not in England.
But I just remember an open window.
That's 3 minutes.
All right.
It may have been that the window was just open anyway as a coincidence.
Okay.
Time to decide.
I think I think it's true.
Okay, why?
That's what I'm going to go with. Just because it's such an absurd thing.
What, you think I'm an absurd person?
No, I think it's just such a random thing to be scared of that it's difficult to make. Although
the truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah, but the fact your brother was there and he.
You think that my brother would have stolen the money?
I'm going to say it's false. I'm going to say it's a lie.
Okay. All right. Well, in fact, it's true.
Bollocks.
I told you. I can tell. I can tell when people
right.
lie.
So you got 2 points.
So,
I've got
2 points. And what we need...
And I'm going to do my story
and now.
And
now your story. Okay.
Another 3 minutes on the clock. Oh, man. I'm going to come second again.
I'm close.
No.
Especially because we know that this one's a lie before you even start talking.
Let's do we?
Go. Yeah, we do. Let's go.
So when I was a kid, I almost burnt down my house.
Nice.
You almost burnt down your house. Almost burnt down your house when you were a kid. How old?
6 or 7.
Which one, Paul?
I don't know. It's like your tooth fairy thing. I don't remember.
Okay, you almost burnt down your house. Okay, just how did it happen?
If indeed it did happen. I set a light to the bush outside the fire.
Outside the fire?
Sorry, outside the house.
Okay.
And it almost hit the house and put the house
How close was it to burning? So was the house on fire at all?
The house was never on fire.
Oh.
How did you start the fire?
With a match and a...
How did you get hold of these matches? Do your parents smoke?
Yes, they both do.
Okay.
That adds weight
and
to the
story. just tell me the thought process that you were going through when you decided to burn this bush. Was it a sort of religious thing? Was it like...
Ooh, children burn stuff.
Did you hear about Moses and you were like, I want to see a burning bush as well. No. Did the bush talk to you?
The bush didn't talk to me, but my parents did. They were very angry that I set the bush on fire.
Punishment?
Where were you? What country was this?
This was in France.
Where in France?
Where we lived in France.
Did you live in a house?
We lived in a house, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Where was... Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, yeah, where?
Go on.
It was in the southwest, well, it was east of France, near Geneva, near Evian, where they make the water.
Were you on your own?
Was I on my own?
Just you, none of your friends with you?
Oh, at the time of what? Of me
the
setting
fire?
It out?
That's the subject I was talking about.
Yeah. I was on my own.
Did they use Evian to put out the fire?
they maybe did. There was lots of water involved, buckets and stuff like that.
Okay.
It might have been Evian that came.
How close was the fire to the house? Be honest.
How close was the fire to the house? It was the bush was kind of a tall bush that led to the house. So if the bush, like, it was about as tall as this roof, about, I don't know, 10 foot high.
Okay,
and the bush was like fully on fire.
Mm.
Did you run and tell your parents, or did they see the fire?
That's a great question. I don't actually remember. It might have been a neighbour that's seen it. I don't understand.
Trauma.
I don't remember.
It was a traumatic event.
Okay, yeah. Just tell me quickly, on the moment that it happened, what was the emotion that you went through? Like, just put yourself back in your shoes when you were 6 or 7 years old and you just struck a match and threw it on the ground. Just tell me the experience directly, what it was like.
I was playing next to the bush. There was some dry grass, hay or whatever. Not hay, but like, you know, dry.
Yeah,
it was
dry grass.
It was in the summer.
Yeah.
And I was playing around with matches. And suddenly that caught fire, the ground caught fire, and then it spread up to the bush.
All right.
And I scared, I guess, I was like 6 or 7, so I was...
Luke, I'm afraid that's your 3 minutes.
Okay, all right. Bloody hell. You know, if I get this wrong, then it's going to be Stephen Stevens again, isn't it?
And then we'll just call it quits.
Okay.
We'll call it quits, but
I think it's true.
I think it's true too.
I think it's true just because... It's the sort of thing that you would do.
It's the sort of thing Paul would do, definitely.
Yeah. So?
It's true.
Yeah. I thought that neither of you would lie. Before we even got here, I thought they're both going to tell the truth. I know it. And you did. Four true stories.
Yeah.
You two.
Yeah, the one that I was debating about, but I didn't have enough time to research, was the Elijah Wood John Hurt. I was going to say I spent Valentine's Day with Leonardo DiCaprio and Michael Caine when they were filming Inception. Because there's a scene where they're in the university and Michael Caine's the teacher. And what's her name? Ellen Page is also in that bit.
It feels like cheating though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What?
Because it's still two celebrities filming in the same type of scene.
Yeah.
I mean, you're changing the characters, the date and the venue, but you're still kind of exactly the same story.
I consider just keeping the whole story the same, but changing one detail. I feel like that's cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so the final scores at the end. Let's see. Amber came away with 2 points, of course. Paul ended up with 3 points. 3 points at the end. And then I've emerged victorious with a total of 6 points. Now, what does that...
No, because you both got the same.
No.
You knew it was true. Oh, no, you said it was false.
I missed.
Thought the Tooth Fairy was a lie?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Ah, okay.
So he got 0 in round 4.
Okay, so Luke
got 2 points. Yeah.
And I got 2 points. Yeah, and he got 0 in round 5, and I got 1 point.
Luke
is
the champion of Luke's English podcast.
So what does that mean? Does that mean I'm a psychopath? That I'm able to both lie and...
No, because interestingly, Luke, what you did was you always told the truth. One, you were prepared to believe other people. With Paul, that was easy because he was telling the truth. And you wanted to believe me, even though I patently did not know any details about the cinema, which is actually one of the key elements in this story. So you wanted to believe everyone.
Right.
And when confronted with a liar, you couldn't see that lie, but you were able to be convinced by your convincing friend Paul to go with him in a sort of camaraderie.
I think
we could pull the wool over your eyes, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. So the reason that I won is because I just got lucky because you told the truth more.
We told the truth more.
So you're saying I'm able to detect when people are telling the truth, but I'm not able to detect if they're lying. So for example, I just assume that people are lying. I'm a good
telling the truth.
I assume that people are telling the truth because
you
I,
want to see the
yeah,
good.
Yeah, you're a trustworthy
person.
I
see the good in people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which could be a weakness if people try and lie to me, because I'll be like, Amber wouldn't lie to me.
Well,
Amber and Paul wouldn't lie to me. They're my friends.
No, I don't know, because then when I lied to you, Paul was able to convince you. So you were confronted with like your instinct. I want to believe Amber, and then Paul was like, "No, Amber's lying. This is why," and you were able to, you know, resign your judgment in, you know, the faith in humanity and go with Paul to believe that I was lying.
So Paul, you helped me to win this game.
I did.
Yep. Thank you.
It's thanks to Paul that you've won.
So in a sense, Paul
is the winner.
He's the real vote. He's the real most valuable player.
Because
Paul was
because
the only
one. I always told the truth and I knew when someone was lying.
Yes, Paul only told the truth and he could detect a lie.
But wait a minute. I won the game though, right? Stop trying to twist it around. Don't steal this victory. Don't take this victory away from me.
We all
feels
won.
Good. I think that I think something we can learn from this is that in the end, we all won from this experience, didn't we?
Apart from Amber, she definitely lost.
I definitely lost.
You did, didn't you? But I hope that the listeners to Luke's English Podcast feel that they're the real winners here, because they got to listen to this nonsense. hour and 20 minutes of nonsense. I hope so. I hope that my listeners feel like they've enjoyed that experience. There's a game that you can play with your friends. It's a sort of a parlor game, isn't it? The lie game. It's quite good fun. Mm.
I feel like the only way to make it better.
Yeah.
Oh,
is to have no.
Because
there's a TV show in the UK called Would You Lie to Me or Would I Lie
would
to
I lie
You?
To
would
you?
I lie to you?
Would you lie to me?
Would you lie to me? No, of course I wouldn't lie to you. Oh, okay then.
Would I lie to you? And the reason why it's easier for the lying bit is that there's a fourth person who isn't involved in the actual game. But what you have to do as a player, you pick up a card, and on that card is a statement. And it could either be one of your statements you've submitted to this person, mm-hmm. or it's a fake statement, and then you have to make it up kind of as you're going.
Mm.
But that's more difficult to do as a game, because you need a fourth person to write all of the statements.
Exactly.
And that fourth person has to collect true statements from people and then write a bunch of lies.
Yeah.
And it's just, in terms of an exercise for the English language teacher, it's just a lot longer to prepare.
Yeah.
And it's easier to go in and say, right, tell us something. Is it true or if it's a lie? We've got to ask you questions. And if we're right, we get a point.
Yeah, but that's if you're the English teacher, then you can do that. You can be the person, the adjudicator that...
Yeah, but
there's a lot of preparation because they need to submit their statements. You need to write more.
The teacher
more
then has to prepare more and, you know...
And also people
if you're
anxious,
a lazy teacher...
No, it's not a question of being lazy. Teachers are always overworked. And the least amount of preparation possible is better. It's about efficiency.
It's true.
Mm.
Good.
But, you know, I suppose some teachers could prepare a bunch of cards laminated with a bunch of true points on them.
I guess you only have to do one. Like to come up with a fake, like let's say you got 10 students.
Yeah.
You have to, as a teacher, have to come up with 10 fake stories.
Yeah.
And then just ask them to give you 10 real stories.
Yeah.
And then...
But they would have to be written on identical pieces of paper or identical cards.
Yeah, that's true.
And what's going to happen is you use the game again and again. The fake ones that you wrote are going to get older, and they're going to be. It's going to be obvious which ones are true and which ones are not true, and that'll skew the game. So sometimes the more complicated the idea, the less effective it is. Mm. So keep it simple. Often is a good answer. Guys, thank you so much for being on another episode of Luke's English Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed yourselves.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us on again.
I feel like I've learned something about both of you.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. I feel like I've forgotten things that I used to know, if that's possible. All right then, listeners, don't forget to visit the page for this episode where you will find a description of that game in case you want to take it away and use it yourself. Don't forget that it is that I own all of the intellectual property rights for this game, and so if you do attempt to create a board game out of this and publish it and make money off it, I will take you to court. Okay, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. I will find you. I will track you down, and I will sue you. Okay. All right, I just wanted to remind you that weird passive aggressive ending.
Now, if you did like the game and you're planning on using it as a teacher, then feel free to donate a couple of money.
A couple of money
to your Luke's English Podcast. There's a little donate button there, you know, and Luke makes his podcasts out of the warmth of his heart, and they're all free, and he puts a lot of effort into them. And so if you like the game and you're planning on using it, then, you know, just donate, I don't know, a pound, a euro, a yen, whatever your currency is.
Not a yen. A yen is worth virtually nothing.
Whatever, you know what I mean. Like a monetary value,
yes.
Value that you feel acceptable at Luke's English Podcast. So teacherluke.co.uk. And then you just click the donate button.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks very much. Okay, I appreciate that. Okay, we're gonna say goodbye on that note. So, can you all join me in a bye bye bye?
Yeah.
You know how this works?
We do.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening to the episode, ladies and gentlemen. We'll speak to you again soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye.
Bye.
This is not the end of this episode of Luke's English Podcast, because in fact I've got some other things to say. But thanks for listening anyway.
Right, so yeah, it's not the end of this episode of the podcast, because I've still got some other things to say. In fact, I promised at the beginning of the episode that I would talk to you, specifically those of you out there who are English language teachers, and I think that some of you listen to this podcast, because I just wanted to talk to you about the lying game and how I use it as a teacher in my classes, all right? I think what I'm going to do is just put a PDF download on the page for this episode, which is a sort of a worksheet for the lying game. You can download it and print it and use it in your classes. You're free to do that. If you do use my lying game, it's a very simple game. You might have similar activities yourselves. It's quite a common activity. And as learners of English, maybe you've been in classes before where your teachers have used something similar to that. But I find it to be a successful game. And the format, I've kind of... I found a winning formula, and it's worked for me. So if you're a teacher of English, then check this out. You might want to use this approach. Just a suggestion, okay? So how do I do the lying game? What level is it appropriate for? Well, I find that I can kind of use the game to some extent with most levels, but really it's about, really you need students who are able to use past simple tense. That's the main thing. Past simple tense, first of all. But the game can be used to practice, you know, present tenses as well for habits. But it's a fairly complicated game, and it works best when the students have a certain level of fluency. And so I would say intermediate, upper intermediate, and above, basically. And it's a good way to, first of all, practice question formation, but also to practice... usually past tenses, so past simple or the other past tenses, like, you know, past continuous or past perfect, those tenses that we use to sequence events in the past, basically. And also the question forms that go along with those verb forms, all right? So kind of forming forming questions using different past tenses. So there's that kind of structural work. But also there's some pronunciation work in there as well, which is kind of like how you give intonation in questions. So things like, you know, normally when you ask a question, you'll have a certain type of intonation. So, for example, when did you go? Like, when did you go to? So, when did you go to New York? For example, when did you go? But also, sometimes that kind of question can be delivered with a different sort of intonation. It's like, when did you go? And when did you go is often used when someone has already answered the question before and you're repeating. Okay, so for example, I went to New York. Okay, when did you go? I went in April, and then a couple of moments later. Sorry, when did you go? It was in April. Okay, right. Thank you. All right. And also, you could just play around with sort of the attitude of being suspicious and how that affects the way that you ask questions and the intonation pattern, for example. You end up using things like tag questions. So it can be quite a good way of looking at whether your students are using tag questions or not. And then afterwards, you can sort of teach them tag questions and do practice. So tag questions are quite useful in this game because they allow you to be a bit suspicious. So you went to New York, did you? You know, that sort of thing. Or it was hot, was it? You know, it was hot, was it? Now, notice that I said it was hot, was it? Not it was hot, wasn't it? Now, that's because normally in a tag question, the tag is negative, right? Or the tag is basically inverted. So it was hot, wasn't it? Okay, so was and wasn't. But if you say it was hot, was it? There you kind of that's a more of a challenging question. For example, you think it was hot and you want them to confirm that it was hot. Okay, so it's not just like, so it was hot, wasn't it? You want them to say yes. Okay, that's the standard way. It wasn't hot, was it? Or it was hot, wasn't it? Or it was hot, wasn't it? Like, I don't know if it was hot. It was hot, wasn't it? Or, but in this case, it was hot. It was hot, was it? That just has a slightly more suspicious feel to it. So it was hot, was it? Okay, that's interesting. So if you're sort of skeptical or suspicious, the tag question is not inverted. Imagine in a job interview, someone is looking at your CV and they say, "So you worked in a restaurant for 2 years, did you?" You worked in a restaurant for 2 years, did you? And that kind of means, apparently you worked in a restaurant for 2 years. I want you to tell me more because I'm a bit skeptical. Okay, so that's quite interesting. So, yeah, you can use it to practice those tenses and different types of questions with different types of intonation. And so the way I usually do it is I'll start by explaining the game to them. I just say, okay, everyone, today we're going to do a speaking game. It's going to be a chance to practice using tenses or whatever. You might want to justify it with some grammatical purpose, or especially if it follows some like study that you've been doing. It's quite a good task and game that you can do as free practice for using question formation or any of the other grammar that I've just mentioned. So I come in and I say, okay, everyone, we're going to play a game. It's a game that I've played with my students a lot of times, and it's usually quite fun. My students enjoy it. Let's see if you enjoy it too. Now, the idea there is that you're suggesting to them, if you don't enjoy it, then you're not a fun group of people. You know, just by suggesting to them that other groups have had really lots of fun and found it very useful, you're suggesting to them that if they don't find it fun and useful, then they, you know, they're not a great group. So that kind of is a little bit of sort of mind control or encouragement to make them try and enjoy the game, you know, because it really works best if they get into it and try and enjoy it. So it find some way of encouraging them to really enjoy themselves and see it as a chance to practice language in a safe environment. Okay, so I then explain the rules of the game and say, okay, so it's called the lying game. In fact, I sometimes call this game by a different name. I call it I Know What You Did Last Summer. And that works with students because usually they don't know each other very well, and often they don't know what each other did last summer. So even you can just focus it on that context. What did you do last summer? Okay. And the game is called I Know What You Did Last Summer, which is quite fun because it's also the name of a horror film that you might know. So let's say you've presented it like that. So the game is called I Know What You Did Last Summer, and it's written on the board. also known as the lying game. And you say, we're going to play a game. In this game, you can lie or you can tell the truth. It's up to you. And the what I like about that is that sometimes people don't feel comfortable about lying, or they're not very good at inventing stories. And so you're giving them the option. If they can't come up with a crazy lie, they can just say something that's true. So it's quite easy to play this game, and it allows people to be creative or not if they don't want to be, and still enjoy the game. So you can lie or you can tell the truth. It's your choice. And we have to guess if you're lying or if you're telling the truth. Okay. And here are the rules. So you write these up. Rule, you know, step one, number one, you have to answer this question. What did you do last summer? So someone will ask you this question. What did you do last summer? And you can get them to repeat it. Just say, okay, can you repeat that? What did you do last summer? Okay, just get them to repeat it a couple of times just to get used to saying it. And then point two, it said, you write this. You can tell the truth or tell a lie. Okay, tell the truth or tell a lie. Now, you might at this point want to go through some vocabulary like tell the truth, tell a lie, or to lie, or for example, he's lying, she's lying, she's telling the truth, I don't believe her, you know, she's quite convincing. It's just like, also, often you find that they look for the phrase, it's just instinct, it's just my intuition. Often when they're justifying their choice, they say, they point to their chest, and you can say, it's just my intuition, it's a gut feeling. So you can kind of explain those bits of vocab as well. What else? Stuff like the word gullible, as we had in this episode. So, you know, are you gullible? Are you difficult to convince? Lots of language that you can also add into this as well and practice it a little bit. So, it's a long lesson, this. If you do it in the right way, you can justify spending an hour on this. So you've got, you can lie or you can tell the truth. And then part three is we ask you questions, or your partners ask you questions, lots of questions. And you've got to encourage them to ask lots. Imagine you're like a police officer, or you're like a detective like Sherlock Holmes. You've got to try and ask as many questions as possible to get to the answer. You've got to find out if it's true or if it's a lie. Okay. And you know, you just remind them that we're looking for all kinds of questions. It depends on the level of the group. You might want to just keep it simple and just say WH questions, you know, instead of encouraging them to use different forms. But if it's a higher level group, you can say, you can try tag questions. I want to hear different types of questions. You know, I want to, you're probably going to be suspicious and stuff like that. So part three. And then part four. And you, by the way, you leave a big gap on the board for part three, because you're going to write loads of questions in there in just a few moments. All right. Part four is, then we guess, are you lying or are you telling the truth? Okay. And so we guess and we justify, we explain why. So I think you're lying because, and then you justify it. So I think you're lying because I don't believe what you said. Or I think you're lying because there was too much information. Or I think you're lying because I don't believe you. I think you're lying because you were laughing. I think you're lying because it's just my gut feeling, for example. All right. And then you explain the scoring system. If you get it right, if someone gets it right, they get 1 point. If they get it wrong, they get no points. But if someone gets it wrong, you get 2 points. So you need to explain that as well. Okay. And then for part three, so by the way, you might need to at that point demonstrate and go, okay, I'm going to demonstrate. I'll go first. Can someone ask me the question? And one of the students goes, okay, what did you do last summer? And you say, you have to prepare something. You know, you say, last summer I met Chad Smith, the drummer from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I met Chad Smith from the, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And they'll go, yeah, of course. And you go, Chad Smith, he's the drummer. He looks a bit like Will Ferrell, the actor. All right. You know who he is? Okay. So I met Chad Smith. This is a lie, by the way. But I met, or you can come up with something really ridiculous. Like I used to use something really ridiculous just to kind of take the pressure off a little bit. And I'd say, last summer I went to the moon. And it's obviously a lie, you know, it's just a joke, but it just takes the pressure off. And so, okay, let's go with, let's have this one. I went to the moon with Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And they're all, obviously they're all convinced it's a lie. But then you say, okay, but ask me some questions. Your choice. You can go with something obvious and silly or something more difficult for them to work out. And then you just elicit loads of questions from the group. The why, who, when, how, where, and all of those sorts of things. All right. So try and get as many questions up on the board as you can using different question words. Try and get a wide range of different questions and elicit them, correct their questions, and write the correct versions up on the board. Okay, so that's like a little error correction exercise. You could write the questions as they say them to you. If even if they say them wrong, you write them up and you just elicit a bunch of sort of like half-baked, like slightly dodgy questions with bad grammar and a few mistakes. Some of them will be correct, some of them won't. You write them all up anyway. And once you've got a bunch of questions on the board, a fairly wide range, you've kind of helped to give them inspiration. At that point, you go, okay, error correction. And you say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 of these questions are wrong. And I want you to find the wrong questions. Go. And then you say, in pairs, you're a pair. You got 5 minutes or less. Find the 7 mistakes and correct them. Go. So then they huddle together with their partner and they go, what about question 2? Is that correct? Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah. Question 3 is definitely wrong because it's not present perfect. It's not when have you gone to the moon? It would be when did you go exactly? All right. And they have little conversations. And then after that, after a few minutes have gone by, you say, okay, so corrections. And you get the corrections from each student and you correct the questions up on the board there. And then you can do some vocabulary drills. Once you've got all the correct questions, you then lead the class through some drills where you go through each question. You know, when did you go? Who did you go with? What was it like? What did you see? How long did it take? All of that kind of stuff. With drills, you can start by drilling them with the questions visible. So you just show them the questions and you say, when did you go? What did you do? And they do that. Do it as a group. Do it individually. Ask individuals to do them as well. And then what you can do is you can sort of remove some of the words on the board and ask them to continue the drills, but with missing words, and then add the words in afterwards. Or you can just stand in front of the words so they can't see them and continue the drill. And that's usually a funny moment. Like you're drilling. It's not too difficult because they can read the sentences. And then you go, okay, let's do it again. And then you stand in front of all of the sentences and they kind of go, oh, this is going to be difficult. I find drilling is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant, especially drilling when they can't read the sentences. Because when the students can read the sentences, they're in their comfort zone and it's a bit easy and they start switching off. And some of the more big-headed students, you get the impression they're like, oh, this is easy. Teacher, too easy, this is too easy, you know? And then you go, oh, too easy, is it? All right, then let's try this. And then you stand in front of the board and then they're like, okay, repeat it after me. And then you have to make them a bit complicated. You know, why did you go to the moon with Will Ferrell in a spaceship? And they have to say, why did you go to Will? Why did you go? It's difficult. Why did you go to the moon with Will Ferrell in a spaceship? And then you say, all right, that's good, but no pauses. And they have to go, why did you go to the moon with Will Ferrell in a spaceship? And they say, that's good, but say it again, no pauses. Why did you go to the moon with Will Ferrell in a spaceship? And they do it like that, you know? So lots of drills, even before you've played the game. Hopefully, if you're doing it in the engaging and interesting way, then they will pay attention throughout this and they won't get bored. And there's the promise of the game that's going to come. You know, and hopefully they're starting to think of ideas and things while you're playing this, if they're good students and if they're concentrating and if all the timing is going right. You know? Okay. So once you've done all that, then you can say, okay, now it's your turn. By the way, you need to still play the game, right? So you let them ask all the questions finally, and you give your answers briefly. And then after a couple of minutes of demonstration of you talking about how you went to the moon with Will Ferrell or whatever your story is, you then give them the option. Do you think I'm lying or telling the truth? And of course they'll go, you're lying. Why? Because it's ridiculous. Okay. And what about you? And they all say you're lying or whatever. And then at the end you go, well, of course it's a lie. And they all go, well, of course it was. What you can do at that point is go, okay, you got it. All of you got it correct. So you get 1 point. I didn't convince any of you because you all got it correct. I get zero. Okay. If you'd said it was true, I would get 2 points, but you didn't. You said it was a lie. So I get nothing and you get 1 point. Okay. Right now. And then you put everyone into little groups of three, probably. If you've got 12 students, that's like four groups, something like groups of three. It can work in pairs, but it's better when there's three, at least three people. Four is okay. Five is a little bit too much because you tend to find some people dominate in a group of five and other people sit back and they're quiet. So three or four, that's best. And you say, okay, you're going to play the game. And first of all, you get them to write a score chart, a little score table on the piece of paper. They write their names. So then you can say, okay, take turns. Someone starts by answering the question, what did you do last summer? And then play the game, okay? And when you've finished, count the scores. Let's see who's the winner. And then they go and they play the game. Now, good groups, students who are kind of motivated and willing to experiment and slightly outgoing, those good groups will sort of mess around with the game and they'll start playing it and they'll look at the question words on the questions on the board and they'll use them and they'll remember stuff and they'll use intonation and they'll hopefully be creative and have fun. And you can move around monitoring and just sort of listening to the stuff that they're saying and making corrections on the spot, helping out if necessary, you know, giving them a little bit of a creative push here and there, writing down corrections in a notepad, which you can then write up on the board or give them as homework. And you just basically help to facilitate the exercise as you move around the room. And then at the end, as a whole group, you can say, so what happened? Who won? And, you know, you can kind of have a little feedback session where they explain who won the game and stuff like that. And as a follow-up, you can either give them error correction on the board or error correction as homework if you can photocopy your notes or put them onto like a Word document and send it to them on the internet or something like that. Or if you're using a Moodle, you can just publish the error correction on the Moodle or on your blog or whatever, and they can find it, print it, correct the mistakes, and bring it as homework tomorrow. Or another piece of homework would be that they write a description of their story. Okay, and they just sort of flesh it out into a story, basically, and they just write it. If you wanted, you could ask them to write it in the form of an email to a friend saying, oh, you'll never believe what happened to me. And then they write their story in the form of an email. Or alternatively, you know, if you're super creative and you've got the time and the technology, you could get them to record their stories separately and then come back and play the recordings to each other, or they post their recordings onto the Moodle or the website that you're using for your class, and they can share their recordings. There's loads of stuff that you could make. They could make videos and things of their stories, and all sorts of stuff that you can follow that. Okay, you could go back into some of the grammar and do some more grammar work on past tenses based on some of the mistakes that you heard them making. If they couldn't use the past perfect or past continuous, or if they're getting ed endings or wrong or any other issue, you can then sort of like focus on it after listening to them play the game. Okay, so that's my like bit of advice for teachers on how to use the lying game in the classroom. And yeah, I guess I'm going to make a PDF that you can download, which has got the instructions on there. And they're simple instructions, you know, point one, point two, point three, and point four. Feel free to use it, teachers, but as Paul said in this episode, you might consider just helping me out, supporting me, because I'm being a bit generous. You could support me by just giving me a donation on my website if you think that my work is valuable and useful. Okay, right, so that's it. Okay, hello listeners, hello Lepsters, hello students of English. You might have felt like this bit wasn't for you, but I hope that you've enjoyed listening to that was like a conversation in the teacher's room that you just listen to, isn't it? Normally, English lessons happen in the classroom, and then the teachers disappear into the teacher's room, and you might wonder, what are they talking about in that teacher's room? What goes on behind that door? Well, a lot of the time, to be honest, that the teachers are sharing ideas for lessons and helping each other out, think of new ideas. And that's one of the cool things about being a teacher, is that you spend time with other cool people. In my experience, most English teachers are pretty cool, laid back, quite creative, and nice people who make good conversation. So that's the sort of thing that you might have heard in the teacher's room, me explaining how to play the lion game. And I imagine other people would be like, the lion game? What's the lion game? Does that involve big cats? It's no, not the lion game, the lying game. Oh, right, hilarious. Because, of course, English teachers are all absolutely hilarious people with really brilliant senses of humour. Of course they are. Thanks for listening to this episode. Leave your comments on the website. Consider making me a donation if you fancy it. Or take advantage of the Audible offer, where you can get a free audiobook. audibletrial.com/teacherluke, or click one of the buttons on my website. I'm now going to stop talking. I will be back in your computer or in your phone or in your headphones or in your eardrums before too long. But for now, it's just time for me to close the episode by saying goodbye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.